And one of my childhood heroes, and I'm a huge soccer fan, as you guys know, Fernando Fiore. He is a longtime legend in soccer here in the States. Worked in Univision, being sport, and of course, like the big World Cups at Fox. And Fernando, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you, man. And you almost made me cry when you said I was your hero from your childhood. But there are tears of joy, of happiness, because I love when people tell me, you know, I've been watching you for so long. I've been in this business for over 30 years. I started in television in Telemundo back in 1988. I went to Univision. I spent there 25 years of my life. I did 7 World Cups with them. So, you know, I'm really happy that, you know, that I was part of you guys and your families for so long, you know?
Yeah. I mean, looking at soccer today has grown so much, because when I grew up, I was born in 85 and I grew up with you, Cantor, Roberto Longo. And right, I used
Roberto
to,
Longo, rest in peace.
Also listen to, like the radio, here in Miami, 1260 AM. Caracol, which you were a host.
I was in Caracol also in 1998. I had a show there called Among Friends, Entre Amigos. That was a great experience. We did that 1 year, 1998, right? That was the year before I started working with República Deportiva and Univision. I remember that I was still doing Fuera de Serie back then. And so it was... Imagine, I didn't have cellular phones to call from around the world. So we were calling, I was calling the radio from pay phones in Rome or in Spain to be able to participate in the show. And you know, it seems like it was ages ago. And actually, it was ages ago because that was 1998.
Now, we'll have to go a little bit back. Tell us, how'd you get to the States and how'd you get started with broadcasting?
Yeah, well, I came to the States because I'm from Argentina, and I was 19 years old. I was trying to study broadcasting in Argentina, but unfortunately, it was kind of difficult when I graduated from high school, because I was 17 back then, and I needed to be 18 to be able to take the test to see if they admitted me in the school. It was a superior institute of broadcasting. And unfortunately, you know, I have to sit down for a year, which I went to university to do something else, but it wasn't what I really wanted to do. And then I have 1 year of, of the Air Force, because back in those days, it was mandatory. So I'm a veteran in Argentina for 1 year. And then I decided to move to the U.S. because my family was living in New York back then in 1980. So 5 years before you were born, I decided to reborn in New Jersey and the New York area. And I spent the first 10 years working odd jobs like any other immigrant, and, painting walls or being a driver. I work in a meat factory, and then finally I got another job that they were more what I wanted to do. So I studied tourism. I graduated in tourism. I never studied journalism. That wasn't actually what I wanted to do. I wanted to be more into acting. So I studied theater. I worked in the Twin Towers. I was a tour guide on the observatory deck of the Twin Towers. And then I was a tour guy, and when I graduated, I was a tour planner for 10 years until I finally got my break with Telemundo in 1988.
Something that which I actually listened to a few podcasts before, and that story of yours was huge. Now tell us, back in the 80s and obviously like the early 90s, was the World Cup very visible back then? Because I was hearing it's very limited.
Yeah, well, the first World Cup here for me was 1982. I saw it with Norberto Longo and Tony Tirado, a Peruvian broadcaster, famous broadcaster. That was in SIN, La Cadena Pecado, Spanish International Network. That was the origin of Univision when they were part of Televisa and those guys. So that was my first World Cup that I watched it on TV. It was okay. it was okay. I was watching it on TV on 1982. You can watch the games. Not every game. I don't think that you can watch it every single game. Previous to that, in 1980, was a very important tournament called El Mundialito in Uruguay. And I watched it on the Madison Square Garden in big, a huge screen that they were doing their pay-per-view at that time. And then by 1986, yes, we were watching every game on TV, also in Univision. And then 4 years later, it was my first World Cup in 1990 when I was working in Univision. I did a post-game show at night in New York. And then I fully started in 94 working with Univision and sports, and we did with Andres Cantor and Norberto Longo and Jesse Lozada. We did the World Cup in 1994 in the US. That was the first one. Then 1998, it was the first World Cup that I was a host that I did in 98, 2002, 2006, 2010. So back in the 80s and 90s, I'm telling you, the World Cups was somehow okay to watch. And easy to find the games. But besides that, nothing. I mean, it was pretty much, you know, one game that maybe was a rebroadcast from Europe or something like that. You know, it wasn't very visible. And then I was going to see the NASL at that time, the Cosmos, right after Pelé, but still with Beckenbauer. I used to go to the stadium, Channel 9. In New Jersey, used to broadcast the games, but it was very difficult. They only watched, you know, they only show us probably the NASL, the soccer bowl that it was going at the end of the final. ABC was usually showing that game, but not much than that.
Now, back in 1994, which was my first World Cup in the United States, what was like the whole ambience back then? Was it like a new beginning for like the U.S. and soccer back then?
Well, obviously, it was a big thing for us 1990 when we came back to the World Cups finally after 40 years because U.S. was in 1950 and then nothing until 1990. So we start to pay attention more to soccer here. 94 definitely was a big thing for us. Records, attendance on the stadiums, the people were involved. I remember that everybody remembers the first day of the World Cup with O.J. Simpson running in the Ford Bronco, the white Bronco, and then Diana Ross missing the penalty without without goalie. Classic. And to start it in Chicago. Chicago was on Michigan. No, Chicago, I think it was.
Chicago, okay. Soldier Field.
And then that month was kind of, you know, crazy. And for me in particular, my personal story was, you know, was a breaking point because I was already on TV for 6 years and I was doing different things that the people that my colleagues were doing. I respected all my colleagues but they were treating sports and football very serious. And they thought I was crazy because I was, you know, trying to entertain people and have fun. And also I was paying attention to the people that were watching their World Cups, but not necessarily that they were fans of soccer all year around because there were many, many, many millions of people. And especially at that time, a lot of women that they didn't care much about soccer, but they were watching the World Cup. So not many people, you know, from our side were paying attention to that occasional viewer. You know, they always wanted to take care of the rabbit soccer fan that they needed, you know, a lot of information and very specific, but the people didn't pay attention to the casual viewer. And that was when I tried to fill the gap. And I tried to get, I tried to convince my bosses to be a little more loose. 1994, I was crazy enough to do my reports from the World Cup with the national team jerseys. That was insane. I mean, nobody did that, you know. How come you're going to go and do a report on the World Cup without suit and, you know, and a tie? And the people start to like it and enjoy it. You know, it was a different atmosphere because, you know, at the end of the day, sports and soccer is an entertainment. You know, you're going and you have a good time. I mean, you don't go in anymore to the soccer stadium, not even back then. you were going to the soccer stadiums in a suit and tie.
Yeah, that was completely different back then. I remember that, and you were putting on a whole different type of jerseys, but you made soccer fun. It was entertainment.
For me, that was all about.
Yeah. Now, when you went to Fox, which is recently, what's the difference between working for a American network and covering soccer versus like Univision or like, you know, yeah, Univision?
Well, the language. I didn't intend to go to Fox. I didn't have in my mind to work on the general market on English television. It was never my dream. It was never my desire. I live in this country for 40 years, but I think that I'm still thinking in Spanish, and this is, you know, my roots. And I work on Spanish TV all my life. So for me, you know, it wasn't actually, a desire to work for the English market. But an ex-boss of mine, he called me and said, listen, you know, we have a great people here at Fox, but we already have a lot of people that are ex-players, or they're people that they take it so seriously that they're trying to explain so much about the game. We need someone who bring some craziness like you do, you know, in Spanish. And I said, well, you see, this is, you know, English is not my first language. And like I said, I don't like languages pretty much in general. So I feel comfortable in Spanish. But they said, but if you want me to try, I have no problem. And I was surprised. I was embraced by the general market. You know, the people really like my style. I like the confrontations, that they were real with Alexi Lalas or with the other ex-players like Stu Holden, that they always think that the U.S. will win every single game. And sometimes I said, you know, guys, I don't see them playing that well. I think that Argentina will beat them, you know, in Copa America Centenario. And everybody was against me. But, you know, but the viewers, they say, you know, you were actually right, you know. And then Argentina beat our U.S. team 4-1. I think it was 4-0. And everybody was, you know, well, guys, it wasn't, you know, a crazy, you know, decision for me to give this kind of this kind of now, and I was able to do a lot of big events, Gold Cups, Confederation Cup, the World Cup in Russia. But now I don't know. I'm a freelance with them also, so hopefully I will work again next year. I did last year. I did the Women's World Cup and the Gold Cup. So this year I was supposed to be doing again some of the big events, but you know, we didn't have any events. So next year we'll see. Next year, meantime, I went back also to Spanish TV. I'm working with Bein Sports. I have a great project. It was a fantastic project that we started at the beginning of this year. That it was a contest that the people will participate in a contest, and then they will have the chance to travel with a celebrity, which is me, to Spain to see a La Liga game. And we did one trip. It was fantastic. It was a lot of contestants, but then unfortunately we were able to keep going until, you know, whatever they open the stadiums again.
Yeah, that's something that we're all looking forward to, hopefully sooner than later. Fernando, I mean, obviously back in the day, like the whole streaming, I mean, like the whole TV rights was with Univision, ESPN. Now it's grown to a couple more networks. How do you
everybody now has rights for something?
Yeah. How do you see it going today? And do you think there'll be some challenges like the future? Because right now, like to watch the Champions League, you gotta pay, you know, money with CBS, but on the Spanish channels, they're completely free and you can watch it from the app. What do you think about what's going on today with like the TV rights in soccer?
Well, they've been crazy for quite some time, not only soccer, but every sport. The thing is that the main sports in the U.S., like basketball and football and baseball, pretty much we got the big networks that they're taking care of that, because the revenues usually cover the expenses, so they try to do that. With soccer, it's a little difficult because the soccer rights are going up so high that it's difficult to then get the return on investment with the sponsorships, especially for the networks in English. In Spanish, that's why Univision got the chance and Telemundo got the chance to do it for free in their networks is because usually the revenue and the sponsors are much better because the viewership is much higher. So you can get the Champions League or the World Cup in Telemundo and you will get the return on your investment. But for CBS to get the return on investment of a Champions League, which is a niche because not everybody, you know, that speaks English watches the Champions League, and especially at 2 p.m. or 11 a.m. in the West Coast. So it's difficult to sell. So you have to make the viewers pay for those rights. And that's why there are so much paywalls and everybody's complaining. And, you know, but unfortunately, that's what it is. We have to admit, this is not, you know, the soccer is growing and growing every year, but still, it's not the same like in our countries, for example, and like with the Spanish people.
Yeah, there's a lot going on with paywalls, with Peacock, NBC. You know, not you know.
Yeah, like, you have to choose now. You have to choose and see. You know, the other thing is that it's funny because I saw some of my colleagues and friends when they, you know, like Grant Wall, which is a good friend of mine, and I, we work together in Fox, and we have together. A lot of dinners and chats and everything. But, well, you know, when he goes, oh, I don't know what to do, because he watches probably 6 games a day, you know, and he needs to pay every single paywall, Peacock and CBS All Access and ESPN Plus and everything. But that's not the regular soccer fan. I mean, people don't watch 6 games a day, you know, even if you love soccer, if you love soccer, you don't watch 6 games a day because people usually work, you know.
Yeah. and back in the 90s, I remember for like the qualifiers for like the World Cup, every Colombian game, I had to go to a restaurant to watch.
Yeah. Well, we come in a full circle, Leon. This is what happened now. We come in full circle now because now the rights are keep going up, and the only difference is that you don't have to go to a restaurant now. You can pay and watch it at home, but also look what happened with Bein Sports. Bein Sports got all the qualities for the CONMEBOL, and then you know the people, you know, were watching it for free because they have to get in the cable. Once Bein Sports got a problem with Xfinity, with AT&T, that is no longer in the major cables, and you have to go to the apps, then now you have to pay because Bein Sports is not able to get, you know, the revenue from the subscribers on cable. So now you have to pay. So now everybody's complaining, hey, why before we have it for free in Bein Sports, now we have to pay? Well, dudes, because nobody complained when Bein Sports was removed from the big cable channels, you know, from the big cable operators, networks. And now, you know, they cannot afford it. So now you have to pay $30 to see one game.
It's more. I believe it's $50 with one of the
50
apps.
For 2 games. Yeah, 50
for 2 games.
For 2 games, $30 per game. If you want to follow Argentina in a double date, you know, you pay $50. You got both games.
Exactly. What will you tell a young journalist that wants to get into broadcasting and sports? What would you tell him today?
Yeah, that's something that they asked me so many times over the years, and I always have the same answer, that it was pray a lot, because it's very difficult. And my take is that you know, with so many ex-coaches and ex-players going into the networks and going into the broadcasting, it's very difficult to find a place for people that are starting to be, you know, analysts or reporters or so on. The other day I was reading on Twitter that, you know, that many people say, oh, that's, you know, that's not true, because you can see there are young people like my good friends, Nico Cantor, that, you know, that he's not an ex-player and he made it all the way to the top and he's in CBS now. Yeah, but it's 1 in a million, you know, and he didn't depend on his father's last name because he worked hard from the very beginning. I know him since he was born. But it's one kid that also have, you know, a very good chances, because he learned a lot from his family and his dad, and he was able to get that experience. But there are not many, you know, that they can, you know, reach to the top if you are not an ex-player. The only job that the ex-players or ex-coaches are not doing it is play-by-play. The day one of these ex-athletes or coaches decided, oh, you know what? I'm going to do play-by-play instead of the analyst. Then it will be even less jobs. Because right now, many of the journalists, and I say I'm not a journalist, so many of the journalists who study communications or who decided to be a play-by-play announcer, you know, they are people that they didn't play the game because none of the ex-players want to do play-by-play because it's more work, it's more difficult, it's more preparation, and maybe they don't have the talent. You know, it's difficult to be a play-by-play in one way. So all the ex-players are analysts, color commentators, which is fantastic. But those are the positions that they used to be for the young guys that you're telling that they are studying communication, that they study, you know, broadcasting, journalism, sports journalism. Now those seats are taken. I got nothing against them. You know, everybody, you know, is free to do whatever they want in their life. Yeah, I, for that matter, I'm not a journalist, so I'm an actor, right? It just, they asked me to do sports, and I love sports, and I did it, but I didn't take the job of anybody else. But my point is that, you know, it's difficult. It's difficult to get, and it was funny that you asked me that now, because I was reading the other day, and you cannot put an example of my friend Nico, because there are not many. There are not many that have reached to the high level of broadcasting in the big networks. If you are not an ex-player or ex-coach.
Yeah, Nico is a very talented guy. I mean, I've seen him a few times on TV. And you're right. Yeah. And, you know, like, there's other alternative ways now. Now you can do, you know, some podcasting, live streaming.
Yeah, now there are other things. Exactly. Now there are other things. It's a completely different. Yeah, but to do a podcast, we don't, you know, due respect. We do a podcast to do a lot of streaming or things on a network. You don't need to study 4 years of communications. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Right.
You know, you can do it for your own good, you know, and for pride, and because, you know, you want to study. But to tell you the truth, there's a million of people that they're doing podcasts of anything that they don't have journalism skills. You know, it's a different world. It's a completely different world now. Now there is a, you know, the same thing with influencers, with TikTok, with anything, you know, you see it every day, you know, a couple of guys dancing and they have 3 million followers. So it's a completely different spectrum now. If you ask me if I wanted to do something in journalism or in broadcasting, or unless you want to go and, you know, all the way to the top, which you need a journalism, you know, degree, you can do a lot of things without having to study for 4 years or 5 years in university. It's a completely different thing. And if you want to be a doctor or a lawyer or, you know, engineer or, you know, anything, or a professor, there you need it no matter what. You can't go in front of a class and try to, you know, wang it, you know, and wing it and see what you're gonna. But in front of a phone, it's somehow easier.
Yeah, it's quite interesting, like the times we're living in. Fernando, what is the best way to reach you online?
I use my networks very much, so because I have a good sense of playing along with the people that they admire me and they like me, and the people that, you know, they criticize. I also get engaged and have fun, you know, and I think that, you know, that's the whole thing about, you know, is they can reach me in my Twitter at Fernando Fiore. My Instagram is Fiore Oficial with only one C. And eventually I use also Facebook with Fernando Fiore Oficial. But I do a lot of campaigns. I was, you know, during this pandemic, I was lucky enough also to get an offer to do TV, you know, to streaming for Central America. So I was doing with Tigo Sports. We were working doing we did a nice show that we just finished this weekend. We finished the first season, 20 shows for Honduras and El Salvador. It's called Palabra de Presidente. I did a lot of streaming and chats and Zoom and interviews with a lot of my friends, Jorge Campos, Emperador Suárez, Cristian Vieri, Giovanni Savarese, Pedro Troglio, Marcelo Balboa, Mariano Trujillo, Lele Adani, Reinaldo Rueda. it was a great season. I have 20 interviews that they were really nice because I have a lot of friends that I haven't seen in a long time. Carlos Pavón. And I'm also doing a lot of radio. I have also capsules in Spanish called Palabra de Presidente that they are syndicated in GLR Network and in Sirius XM. So, you know, it's a lot of work doing. And I'm doing the broadcast for the Inter Miami, the MLS.
That's news to me. I didn't know that. That's awesome. Wow.
Yeah. We were the idea originally was that I was going to be doing something with the fans at the beginning of the season, but unfortunately the season was without fans. So they switched me around and I'm doing the world feed and I'm doing the pregame, postgame. We have a new radio called Onside Radio. It's, you know, satellite, it's on an internet onside radio. And that's what they have. It's a sports radio now. It's a sports talk show during the week that I'm not involved in that. But then we do the broadcasting of the games.
Well, I will have to check it out. Before we go, will Argentina win the World Cup in your lifetime?
He already did, twice.
Oh, my bad. No, I mean, once again.
once again. Yeah. It did in 78 and 86. So I'm served. I can't ask for more. I would love to have one more with Messi, but it's more and more difficult every time. I will be content first if we can get a Copa America, which we didn't have since 1993, and we lost quite a few finals. So yeah, I'm hoping, but I don't hold my breath.
Interesting perspective. You're right. Like, you're content with, having one or two already, but having one more, it's okay if not, but Copa America would be a extra cherry on top.
I saw when we won the last one, 1993 in Ecuador, that was a long time ago, man.
Batistuta.
Yeah, Batistuta. That's right.
That's a classic.
That was against Mexico in 1993, but Simeone, Zanetti, but that was back in the previous century. So I would love to have one now.
Exactly. Anyways, Fernando, you've been an amazing guest, a huge hero of mine, pleasure. And I appreciate you coming on to the podcast.
No, it's all my pleasure. Thank you very much. I'm so glad that you were watching it since you were a kid. Say hello to your family. God bless you and stay safe and healthy. And it was a pleasure talking to you.
God bless you too.